Hello again, this is Rabbi Jeff Sachs of Atzidin Web Yeshiva with another session in the Rambam's Shmona Prakim, looking at Chapter 5. My sincere apologies for the technical difficulties that kept me from you for all but a couple of minutes last week. We were suffering from a blackout, and even though my computer has a battery, of course, the router, the internet connection, needs electricity, so I was able to connect briefly by picking up somebody else's internet connection in the next door building, but then that building, the electricity went out, so we were cut off. I had just asked a question, and I had passed the microphone to one of you, and then I got cut off, and then at a certain point, I understand you all just disbanded. So my apologies to that. The backstory to this, the interesting backstory to this, is that while this was all going on, my son, who's standing here next to me, was trapped in the elevator of our building. We live in an apartment building here in Efrat with an elevator, and he was in the elevator when the power went out, and he was trapped there for about 45 minutes. And finally, the fire department had to come and bust him out. So that was the background to everything that happened last week. And despite my best efforts, we were not able to learn, so my apologies. I did, however, today have an interesting experience. Thanks to Stacy Siepman, who's joining us, I think, from Iowa. Isn't that correct, Stacy? Stacy, if you're there, you can confirm that either in the chat or on the microphone. You have an open microphone at the moment, if you're there. And again, I'll ask everybody to please hit your send video button on the video panel so that we can see those of you that are with us. So thanks to Stacy, I had the opportunity to listen to our shiur, which took place 2 weeks ago. I listened to the recording, which is something that I almost never do. I find listening to myself, recording of myself teaching, to be very disconcerting. But I had the opportunity to listen to that shiur from 2 weeks ago because I wanted to check something that was on the recording. And I did notice one thing, and I wanted to make note of it and just clarify. I noticed that as we go along, I've been using a lot of very heavy I'm sorry, Stacey, I asked, just wanted you to confirm you're in Iowa. Isn't that correct? Right. So Stacey's in Iowa. Anyway, I noticed while listening to while reviewing the recording that I use a lot of very heavily gendered language, a lot of he's and his and far fewer she's and hers. And that is unintentional. I assume that I am influenced by, working off of the Maimonidean text, which, of course, is by and large a gendered text. But in this case, there's nothing that the Rambam is writing about that's not equally applicable to men and to women in the work, in the hard work, the challenging work of improving one's midot. So just as a side note for the entire series, if I should use gendered language, he and his, it's not the exclusion of she and hers. So last time, I think Brian, is Brian on with us tonight? I don't see Brian. I think I had asked the question and I had turned the microphone over to Brian. The Rambam, after the lengthy fourth chapter, The Rambam enters the fifth chapter with a discussion of Shimush Bekochot HaNefesh LeTachlit Achat, utilizing the forces, the power, the talents of one's soul towards the one great purpose of coming close to the knowledge of God. When last we met, 2 weeks ago, we, by way of introduction, looked at some other texts from the Rambam, principally from the Mishneh Torah, from the Sefer Mada, about what does it mean to know God, some of the paradoxes of knowing God, by way of metaphorical comparison, I mentioned this piece by Oliver Sacks. I got a couple of interesting emails from people about that afterwards. I also posted that article to our website. Also, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's piece about the mind-body paradox, what it means to be a spiritual soul entrapped or encased in a physical body. But I asked last time, and this will come back to now again, since our task is to gain knowledge of God, what would you assume would be the plan that the Rambam would set forth for somebody that needs to go about doing that? What would you assume? So I asked this, I think Joel mentioned, obviously, learning Torah is something that we think about, comes first to mind. But what would you think would be some of the things the Rambam would suggest as necessary activities or the kind of things one needs to do to train himself in order to become a God knower? Like, for example, if I were to tell you I'm interested in becoming an Olympic athlete, so you might put me on some kind of training regimen, and it would include losing a lot of weight and getting into shape and doing these kinds of exercises and taking on that kind of diet and all different types of things. What would you imagine the training regimen would be for somebody who wants to become a knower of God? I'll turn it over to you. I'm happy to turn this over. Now, if you've looked ahead, you know what the Rambam is going to say. But if you haven't looked ahead, consider it for a second. Post something in the chat, or I'd actually even prefer if somebody would be willing to go on record, and I'll pass you the microphone. Please tell me when you're ready. Okay, Tila Leah says, practice midot. Stacy says, okay, that's an interesting idea, Stacy. Okay, so Rachel Bracha talks about what the Rambam had described in the fourth chapter, which was to keep that balance going. Ben and Barbara talk about learning, prayer, meditation, character development. Certainly obvious ideas. Anybody else want to venture a guess, or anybody else want the microphone? Okay. So it may be surprising what the Rambam suggests. I had mentioned last time that there's this kind of paradox. When Moshe asks to see God's face, which is actually coming up, it's this week's parsha. You can go back and listen if you want to talk a little bit about this week's parsha. You can go back to the session we had last time, or 2 weeks ago rather. That whole discussion about when Moshe's request to see God's face, to know God with that kind of intimacy, it's coming up this Shabbat. The response that God gives is, you can't know God fully, Moshe, because you, Moshe, although a remarkable example of the species, are yet but just a man. You are a physical being, and since I, God, am a completely non-corporeal, non-physical being, you're never going to completely get it. And that's why you can only see me from behind, which I explain seems to be some kind of way of explaining you can never really get the whole direct, intimate experience. Even though we say, of course, that Moshe spoke panim el panim, that seems to be a different kind of metaphor for direct communication, but not for full intimate knowledge as if you were looking in the mirror, as it were. But even though we are physical beings and therefore are limited in our ability to ever fully know him, what does God say? Sheyasim b'kavana b'achilato, v'shtiato, v'ilato, shnato, v'yikitzato, v'tnuato, u'menuchato, b'riot gufo bilvad, v'hakavana b'briot gufo, shetimtza ha'nefesh, kelaya b'riim u'shleimim le'echoz b'chochmot, v'leknot ma'alot ha'midot v'ha'malot ha'sichliot ad shetagia l'oto ha'tachlit. How do we go about knowing God? So the first step in the regimen, the first step in the training is eat, drink, and if not be merry, be content. There's a paradox here that insofar as we are living, breathing, physical animals, taking care of those earthly, physical, gashmi needs and keeping this instrument that we inhabit in tune physically. We talked about keeping the personality in tune. But for the Rambam, there's a very holistic view of the human soul in the human body. And just like you have to do that hard work of keeping the personality in balance, you also have to keep the body imbalance, because if you're not of sound body, it's going to be very difficult to be of sound mind, which is, of course, a subsequent step in our exercise routine, in our training session, in our training workout, to become knowers of God, to achieve shetagia l'oto ha'tachlit. The instruments of the soul, right? The both the midot as well as both the mental as well as the moral capacities, the midot hamalot vehasichliot. In answer to your question, right? That everything that you do. Eating, drinking, intimacy, physical intimacy between husband and wife. All of these things are meant to be keeping you in proper tune, in good health. Al ze ha-hekesh lo yichaven az el ha-hana bil va'ad. But all of those activities, eating, drinking, keeping your body in tune, taking pleasure in the world, in the physical world, is not merely for the purpose of gaining pleasure. Ad sheyivchar min ha-machal va-mishteh ha-yoter arev. So that your choices are motivated by pleasure. V'chein b'shar ha'anagot ele yichaven el ha-mo'il. You should aim not for the most pleasurable, but for the most useful. V'im yizdamein sh'yeh arev, yeh. And if the most useful food, for example, happens to also be very tasty, then let it be tasty. V'im yizdamein sh'yeh nim'as, yeh. And if it's less than tasty, that's what it should be. Osh yichaven el ha'arev lefi ha'iyun ha'rifui. And sometimes we're going to make choices. We'll choose things from the menu that are very tasty or very delicious for medical reasons, for reparative reasons. Kigon, and then the Rambam gives an example. The Rambam's medical examples, of course, represent the very best science available in the 12th century. The Rambam, of course, as we know, is a physician. In the Hilchot Deot, which we've touched upon, which is very much, in many ways, the halachic text most parallel to the Shmona Prakim, the Rambam there also gives medical advice. Generally, our position when the Rambam gives medical advice, and a lot of his medical advice had to do with diet. There were notions of certain foods having certain effects on temperament, on personality, etc. Our general assumption is that when the Rambam gives medical advice, even when writing in a halachic text, like the Mishnah Torah, that it's not binding on us in the same way as the Rambam's rulings in Hilchot Shabbat, which are then going to be factored into the mathematics, as it were, of how Psak Halacha develops. And of course, the Rambam's opinions weigh very heavily. No, certainly we can follow them, but we need not follow them in light of more conventional or more advanced understandings of medicine. For example, the Rambam mentions the benefits of eating a lot of meat, which, generally speaking, we don't follow now. Other diet things as well. But here the Rambam is giving, by way of an example, Kigon, Shenechlesha ta'avato lema'achal, somebody who's suffering from an appetite depression. He's not eating properly because he's lost his appetite. So in order to arouse someone's appetite, because obviously it's necessary to eat, obviously it's necessary to keep your strength, obviously it's necessary to take in a certain amount of calories, so therefore we might appetize someone, we might tempt someone to eat by giving him very tasty foods, spicy foods, savory things, and your motivation for what you might choose may not be some kind of monastic eat to live, not live to eat, eat simple, bland foods that are healthy, because there might be some notion that there's something, there's like a certain level of vice involved, people that, desire delicacies, but sometimes we might aim for the delicacy in order to achieve the goal of getting someone to eat if otherwise they're not eating properly. And here it's very much a reflection of what the Rambam said earlier, that there's a balance, there's a middle. We don't believe that you should only have bread and water, even if you could subsist on bread and water. Let's imagine that you could. Obviously, there's not enough nutrients merely in bread and water to keep us going. But you don't need to eat only bread and water. But at the same time, life is not meant to be a banquet, a buffet, 24/7. I remember when I was a kid, we used to go to the Catskills one weekend a year. My parents and friends of theirs and their kids, we used to go up to the Catskills, to the Jewish resorts up in the Catskills, which was just some kind of food fress. I mean, I'm sure some of you have experienced this yourselves at some points in your lives. Hold on a second. Doesn't anybody have a webcam? Can't you please turn on your webcams? It's very off-putting. If you have a webcam, please hit send video. So we'd go to these things, and it was just, you'd eat breakfast would be from 8 o'clock in the morning till 11 o'clock, and then they'd roll you out to the lobby while they reset up for lunch, and the lunch would be from 12 until 3, and then they'd roll you back out to the lobby, and then dinner would be from 5 till 9, and you'd just sit there eating. It would be this incredible, type. There's a reason that, the Jews frequented the Catskills. You know that I'm teaching this other course on the writings of Shai Agnon, that great Hebrew writer. And Agnon is sometimes very nostalgic for the old world. He's sometimes very reverential. He's sometimes very satiric. He has many different modes. Whenever there is a scene of Jews eating, almost without fail, in his 24 volumes of collected stories, if you want to satirize the Jews, he depicts them eating. And almost without fail, every scene of Jews eating is a festival of the grotesque, in the most biting, needling satire. I mean, extremely humorous, of course, because we all recognize it. We've all been there. Most of us have been guilty of it, and certainly all of us have witnessed it, if not, at the end of our own fork, then at the end of the fork of some, uncle or relative or somebody sitting at the table. And I'm sure that each of us, can relate to this in some way or another. That being said, there are times when it's appropriate to eat a rich meal. When you're just like in the work of the Midot, just like in the work of the Midot, where we always aim for the golden mean, for the middle, but sometimes as a therapeutic or a reparative kind of action, we have to tilt to the other side to counterbalance the pull of a particularly strong counter midah. So too in the physical realm, in the in again, the example he's giving is one of diet. Yes, precisely, Ben and or Barbara, whoever it is that's typing in the chat. You do have to be refined. The Rambam's not saying you can become, a glutton and, like those cartoon scenes of Henry VIII, eating the food right off the bone. Refinement, table manners, the kind of decorum that's required of a Jew is one thing. The other thing being that it's okay to sometimes enjoy yourself at a meal. And this echoes back. This all echoes back to that. To what the Rambam was describing about asceticism. The Rambam made it a point to say that we reject the ascetic notion, that kind of idea of there's like a religious value in rejecting the pleasures of the world, the pleasures of the stomach, the pleasures of the flesh, physical needs, be they home or clothing or whatever. The Rambam is not like that. He's not a monk. And he rejects it. He says that it is against the Jewish way. And I've mentioned a couple of times that by and large, the Jewish thought has been in line with what the Rambam says there, with certain exceptions. And that plays into here, into what the Rambam is saying here, that our engagement with the world in which we are encased is one of the paths of acquiring knowledge of God. And that's why perhaps he's so opposed to the ascetic strain, because it would be blocking you off from a knowledge of God. Let's go on to see how he develops this idea. V'chein im hit'ora alav mara shchora, the black bile, the the medieval metaphor for depression. Yasira b'shmiat shirim u'minei niginot. How can you get rid of a foul mood, of a depression? Well, music is a type of way. I don't think that the Rambam is saying that listening to music is like taking Prozac. The Rambam didn't know about Prozac. But the idea being that if one is depressed or downtrodden in a kind of emotional way, so that is counterindicated to a life of finding knowledge of God, because it becomes a, at best, distraction, and at worst, it becomes an inhibitor, a block to the kind of engagement with other people, with the world around you, with Torah, with the hunt, the search for knowledge of God, which we should be on. So therefore, there are pleasures of the world that can help you overcome that. And on an aesthetic point, the Rambam now mentions a few things. He mentions music, he mentions tiul baginot, or baganot, uve vinyanim na'im, to get out into nature, both the natural world as well as the created world, architecture. This is also a kind of medieval Aristotelian or Platonic idea that, you know, gazing at the created world, both created by God and that created by man, although there are probably certain things that man's created which are more effective at doing this, that can create a kind of wonder. The Rambam writes about this in a few places. Our own Rabbi Bravender has written about this in a few places, where he describes the value of engaging with very fine art as a way of attuning ourselves, our personalities, our minds, our souls, our capacities to engage with and to see the world. And that develops a capacity which is very useful to the religious life. So for the Rambam, the idea that the engagement with nature or with creation, of artistic creation, is a way to overcome a foul mood which blocks our ability to do the kind of work that we need to do. V'yasir da'agat ha'mara ha'shchora mimenu. V'tiyeh ha'kavana b'chol zeh shi'avri gufo. And all of our engagement with worldly pleasures should be with the intention that the engagement brings us to a type of mental health, a harmony, a bodily harmony of healthy mind, healthy body, altogether, so that we are fit and ready to go about the work that we have to do. We need not be embarrassed. We need not be apologetic about engaging with the world, but we need to be focused that it is not an end in and of itself. Tasty food, delicacies, art, music, nature, engaging in all these things can be a very positive experience, says the Rambam. This is why we love the Rambam. This is why the Rambam is the great modern Orthodox Jew. This is why, you know, everybody wants the Rambam on their team. But to be clear, for the Rambam, engagement with culture, engagement with nature, engagement with worldly pleasures is an end to a greater purpose. It is as a means, rather, to a greater purpose. That greater purpose is the refinement of the personality, finding harmony in your being, so that you are then attuned to become a knower of God. V'tachlit b'riyut gufo sheyeda. V'chein kesheyenua b'yitasek b'kniyat hamamon. And similarly, work, the acquisition of property, the acquisition of finance. You have to work. You have to do things. You have to acquire money. Tie tachlito b'kabtso oto sheyishtamesh bo lema'alot. So what's the purpose of earning a living? The purpose of earning a living is in order to finance all of those activities so that you can acquire the traits that you need to acquire and free yourself up to become a knower of God. Bishim tse'eu l'kiyum gufo v'hemshech mitziyoto ad sheyasig v'yeda me'ashem ma she'efshar ledato. So you see, the paradox. We can never fully know God because we are physical beings. I think I said last time because we're always so interested in trying to figure out where to get our next hamburger. And that somehow impedes or creates a scenario by which we can never fully get it. But the eating of the hamburger itself, ironically, can become a stepping stone towards knowing God. Insofar as we have to eat something, maybe a hamburger is not such a good example. It may not be the healthiest thing in the world. Have a salad instead, I could hear my mother saying. But sitting down to lunch, if done with the proper kavana, and by kavana here I don't mean the kind of like Kabbalistic meditation. I mean the kind of rigorous focus. I mean the Rambam means the kind of rigorous focus, the kind of mental attunement that's going to help you make the right choices, the right life choices and lifestyle choices in order to move along. Let me just pause for a second to see who's on with us. Okay. Before I move on, is there any, I'm interested in hearing any reflections anybody might have on what the Rambam said here, because again, I think it's interesting when we think about what would be the recipe for moving towards knowledge of God. It's surprising that the first thing the Rambam says is have a good lunch, or you know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Without it, you really are not going to be able to learn well in school. It's a little surprising, turning breakfast or lunch into this kind of spiritual activity. I mean, it's not surprising when you think about it, when you stop to consider, you know, the Rambam's entire worldview. But you know, based upon the way we generally think about these things, it catches us off guard until we stop to. Stop to think about it. Yes. Let me check. Correct. Tila points out the well-known idea from Avot, Im ein kemach, ein Torah, that if you're hungry and you have, even though we have a notion that poverty has its advantages, that it helps focus you and all types of other things, but ultimately, if you're so distracted by your hunger, by your poverty, by your lack of minimal basic resources, so then it's going to be difficult to go about the spiritual work that you need to do. Any other thoughts before we move on? Okay. Now the Rambam goes on. Correct, Stacy. that he's talking about a not he's not speaking about it in a kind of, again, a kind of Kabbalistic a way, but the idea that the mundane, by mundane, what do we mean by the word mundane? It's an important word to pause, to think about. Well, what does the word mundane mean? Yom yom. Okay, meaning what? Right, everyday world. Mundane sometimes takes on this meaning of a bland or dull. That's only one meaning. But mundane really means like the French newspaper Le Monde, the world. It's related to the same world, to the same word as world, meaning this worldly, olam hazeh, rather than the spiritual realm. Correct, certainly the necessity of being mindful of where everything comes from. That's part of the idea of reciting brachot before we eat. That when you say a bracha, when you say a blessing before you eat something, you are transforming that experience into one of taking the jump from mundane to holy, from everyday to special. And that pause, we don't always achieve it. We're not always successful. But you know, the Rambam has a book called Sefer Ahava. Sefer Ahava comes right after Sefer Mada, the book of love, you know, the answer to that old question, that old musical question, who wrote the book of love? The correct answer is the Rambam. The Rambam has one of the 14 books of the Mishneh Torah is called the Book of Love, Sefer Ahava. And in Sefer Ahava, the Rambam talks about brachot and davening and mezuzah and tzitzit and tefillin and all of the kind of day-to-day mitzvot, the kind of mitzvot that because they are so day-to-day, they sometimes become rote, or we perform them out of habituation. But the Rambam says that these are the kinds of things they're meant to, if properly activated, and we don't always do it, they are meant to attune us to love of God. If you use your davening properly, if you use the opportunity to say brachot properly as opportunities to pause 100 times a day before you stop at the water cooler, before you pop the candy into your mouth or the cracker, at your desk, you stop to pause for a moment of God focus. Those are things that are liable to bring you to a love of God. We don't always succeed. These things don't happen automatically. We turn into kind of automatons. But if it's done properly, it's meant to create that consciousness. Did anybody read that book that got so much press a couple of years ago, The Omnivore's Dilemma? By Michael Pollan, Pollan. It was a wonderful book that came out a couple of years ago. No, nobody read it? Yeah, I'll put it up in the chat. There's a wonderful book called The Omnivore's Dilemma, A Natural History of Four Meals, by an author named Michael Pollan, Pollan. He's written a number of books since, all about food and the food industry, and he had this book, Food Rules, a lot of like healthy diety things. He does a lot of work about uncovering the tension in the politics of food and the economics of food, that it could be that eating organic is better for you, but is worse for me. Meaning it's worse for me if you eat organic, because everything comes with hidden costs. And it could be that your organic food is healthier for you, but it's in order to get you the organic broccoli from Peru, the amount of damage that has to be done to the environment, the amount of diesel fuel that has to be burned to fly it, to ship it, to drive it to your market in North America is worse on the planet. And the difficulty of balancing out all of those things, carbon footprint and all different types of things. And he does a very fine job of playing out these different competing values in food and in terms of trying to determine what is healthy and things like that. Anyway, The Omnivore's Dilemma is a wonderful book if anybody... I'm surprised that nobody's read it. It got a tremendous amount of press. But one of the things that that is interesting, that when I read the book, it really made me pause a lot and think about my food. And I actually had an opportunity to communicate with Colin, with the author. I sent him an email, and then we started an email correspondence, which was really quite interesting. He himself is Jewish, although not apparently very Jewishly connected or learned. He was very interested in, at the time, he might have been doing a piece of writing about kashrut and, you know, the movement called Eco Kashrut, trying to hook up kosher eating with a kind of ecological awareness. And he asked me a few questions, and we emailed back and forth for a while. And I mentioned to him that the book helped accomplish for me what it is that we're supposed to do, you know, all the time, through the reciting of brachot before we eat and the benching after we eat, and to create that awareness. And for a while, I must confess that I my eating habits are not what they should be. And I've backslided a little bit, but for a period of time after reading this book, it caused that kind of consciousness about eating, in a way, in a similar way to what brachot are meant to do, and particularly when you filter it here through the Rambam, where there's also a sense of keeping a healthy body is part of the work of serving God, because you are preparing yourself to be a receptacle for knowledge of God. And you're not going to do that unless you healthy body, healthy mind. It's not just, you know, sports or athletics is the most obvious example. Or a few minutes ago, I gave the example of training for the Olympics. And what would be the regimen to do that? And it's surprising that part of what the Rambam is talking about in terms of the Olympics of the soul is very similar. But it's true for a lot of things. If you musicians are not just athletes or dancers, you know, who are obviously have to keep their bodies in very, 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 very well tuned, like a fine machine. But musicians, I read something about Vladimir Horowitz, the great pianist. I read a couple of years ago a biography of Horowitz. He was constantly, you think a pianist, what does he do all day? He has to, I mean, to someone like me who doesn't understand it at all and wouldn't be able to play Mary Had a Little Lamb if I sat in front of a piano, so I'd never thought about it before. You think to play the piano, you sit there and I guess, you know, as long as you don't have arthritis in your fingers and you can bang out a few keys, you could be the world's greatest pianist. But he was almost hypochondriac in worrying about his diet and his weight and his health and his body, not just because he was only not only because not only because he may have been slightly hypochondriac, but because he really felt that his ability to be at the time perhaps the world's greatest pianist, certainly among the 20th century's greatest pianists, the body had to be finely tuned. And everything, it's all one big holistic picture. If his diet was off, if his stomach was off, he wasn't going to be able to do what he had to do when he sat there at the keyboard. Joel sends me a little gentle piece of Musser, but he's a musician, so he knows what he's talking about. The Rambam goes on, Va'al zeh hekesh ye lemelechet harefuah mevo gadol me'od b'malot. And therefore the Rambam says, medicine is an important gateway to the improvement of the soul, to the refinement of the character, and ultimately towards Yediat Hashem, knowing God. Uvahasig ha'atzlacha ha'amitit. V'yu limuda u'drishata avoda min ha'avodot ha'gdolot. And knowing about medicine, knowing about health, these will be very, that would be a very beneficial piece of knowledge to help you acquire other things that you need to do. V'lo tiye az ke'ariga u'kenagarut. And it wouldn't be like knowing other trades, like being a carpenter or being a weaver. That knowledge of medicine, an intimate sense of how to keep the body in fine tune and healthy and balanced, is something that people need to know if they're going to then become an instrument for a proper avodat Hashem. That's one of the great themes here that the Rambam is elaborating. I'm gonna pause here. I'll stay on if anybody has any questions, and we'll continue with this next time. Perhaps we'll even finish the fifth chapter and move on to the sixth chapter after next time. So I will end here. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to stay on.